When you have access to the document, can you write in the document that's not chat? So then, when's the next break?
12:20, 12:40. And then I'll be ready for 12:20.
So, next day is 12:40. Is it going to be playing at 12:40? You're listening to X-Ray. My name is Jefferson Smith. This is Thank You Democracy. Right now we've got Radical Russ Belleville on, spokesperson on the pro side of Measure 91, the legalization of recreational marijuana here in Oregon. It is on the ballot right now. Ballots are about to go out. Voter registration deadline was last night. If you were checking out the X-Ray Facebook pages, or if you were looking around the various interwebs, in studio we've got Russ. Russ, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jefferson, and let me clarify, I'm not an official spokesperson for the Measure 91 campaign.
You're too radical.
Yeah, I'm just a citizen with a very...
You're wearing a tie, though.
Well, you know...
You're wearing a coat and a tie.
Got to dress up for radio.
Jeans. Dress like our governor. So, Mr. Marquis, we had a chance to talk to.
Yes.
You have been... He said you've been filing complaint after complaint, investigation after investigation. How come, man?
Well, my investigation has uncovered that the county drug prevention staff and the county district attorneys have been using their office email, phones, and time to lobby for and to fundraise for a so-called educational tour that we have proven is clearly designed to be a political event against Measure 91.
Okay.
Whether you're pro 91 or anti 91, I think we're all pro democracy and that our public money shouldn't be used to sway an election one way or the other.
So where I want to focus today's conversation is on the issue itself, as much as possible.
But absolutely.
With that plug, we should also look at the question on the other side. So a couple $100,000 is resisting this. Some number of millions of dollars is promoting it. It is true that, you know, Soros and Lewis money is behind it significantly, as are people who are anticipating to be marijuana entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
Should we care about that?
I think it's a big mistake and a desperate attempt at spin by Josh Marquis to try to portray this as David versus Goliath.
Set aside Josh Marquis. Have it just be a question from me.
Okay.
Should we care about who's paying for the measure?
I think what's interesting about who's paying for the measure is looking at the opposition side. Their complaint that they don't have a lot of money, to me, belies the fact that nobody really wants to support this 40-year failed prohibition anymore. Of the $167,000 they have raised, 98.6% of that comes from the Oregon Sheriff's Association and the Oregon Narcotics Officers Association, who are desperately afraid of losing the easy collars of marijuana arrests and citations. There is over $1.4 million in asset forfeiture that went to the county and city police departments and county district attorneys. And the majority of people that are busted for that are busted for marijuana.
So you think, do you genuinely think the Sheriff's Association on this issue is motivated by financial interest?
Partially. It's partially the financial interest they get from the federal burn grants, where they get money from the federal government specifically to go after drug offenders, and that is partially determined by how many arrests they are able to tally. So yes, that is part of it. But another part of it is that contraband marijuana is the key that unlocks the Fourth Amendment. All a cop needs to do when he has a suspicion, a hunch, but not probable cause, his claim that he smells marijuana. There's no way to dispute that in court. Even if you record the cop with your cell phone, you can't record smell. That allows them to bring the drug dog, which false alerts 1 out of 5 times they bring it outside the car, 1 out of 3 times they bring it inside the car. From there, they're able to pull people out of the car, search through their belongings, and if they find a little speck of marijuana, seize their car, seize their property, seize their cash, to the tune of $1.4 million net, $3.2 million gross that the state pulled in the 2013 asset forfeiture report.
So $3.2 million,
$1.4 million that went directly to cops and DAs.
All right. So let's say you're right that the $3 million in revenue from asset forfeiture linked to marijuana accused charges is a motivating factor for the sheriff's opposition to this measure. And of course, it pales in comparison to the money just spent on the campaign to pass marijuana. If we care about the financial interest on the side of the opposition, what do you say to somebody who would question, well, what about like Josh Markey, for instance, he's not getting that money, right? Like, yeah, he cares about his organization's budget. He cares about, but he doesn't get a bonus at the end of the year if they make more. He doesn't get to sell stock options. He doesn't get to build a brand and retire on it. But if I right now buy a marijuana farm, or if I were smarter and I bought it 3 years ago, or if I had a cool way to make a brownie, or if I or if I started compiling storefronts that were sort of cleverly marketed, or if I anywhere in sort of the distribution chain distribution chain of a coming marijuana industry, I have a lot of money to be made. What do you say to that?
Well, I don't know if I'm supposed to apologize for capitalism at this point, but what I'd point out is that marijuana already exists. Marijuana commerce already exists. And while people like to point out that marijuana is decriminalized, in order for someone to get that decriminalized marijuana, they either have to shop from a criminal, become a criminal by growing their own, cheat the medical marijuana program, or drive to Vancouver and buy it legally, and then become a federal trafficking criminal on their way back. This does the Measure 91 just accepts the reality that marijuana is here, people are making a lot of money on it, but none of that money helps us, the citizens. That money helps Mexican drug cartels. That money helps the teenage dealer buy a new Xbox. That money helps criminals. And the reason so much money is pouring into this is because, A, people recognize that this is about freedom and liberty and about ending a 40-year failed prohibition that has given us such statistics as 80 to 91% of high school seniors in this country say they can find marijuana within a day, easily. And this has been going on since 1975. 44% of teenagers say they know personally the drug dealer in their school, and 91% of the time, marijuana is on the menu. Only 6% of the time are cigarettes on the menu. Only 1% of the time is alcohol on the menu. And it's not because underage kids don't smoke and drink. It's because there's no profit in being a tequila dealer. There's no profit in being a Marlboro dealer. Measure 91
You can give a couple bucks to the guy whose shoulder you tap at the plant pantry, right? That guy can make a couple bucks. What got you involved?
It's personal self-interest. To be quite honest with you, I am a 46-year-old man. I'm self-employed. I don't even own a car. I took the bus to get here today. You're welcome. I don't have any children, and I like to use marijuana. I use it on a daily basis, and there's no reason I should be ticketed, fined, forced into rehab. When people say the decrim is no big deal, Josh Markey likes to say it's just like a speeding ticket. I don't know any speeding ticket where the cops take your car after you've been speeding. But in cases of marijuana, they can. They can seize your car. They can seize your cash. A friend of mine recently got a marijuana ticket here in the state of Oregon. That ticket cost her $650, and she's a person of very low means. She couldn't come up with that $650. So in exchange, they said, well, you can go to these drug classes, which means she had to take time off of work. She had to find a ride to get there. And again, she wasn't harming anyone. She was an adult who was using cannabis.
Where I lean with you, and obviously the most powerful argument was motivating a lot of people to change the state of marijuana laws, are stories not only like the one that you mentioned, but a lot of others, including racial impacts, including what's happening in our prison system, and the frustration about law enforcement and the enforcement of drug laws, marijuana laws. But one of the reasons why, I still think this is sort of an interesting issue, and why I want to get past, if it's possible to get past some of our prepared talking points, which because we all have so many, you never get done with them, so it's hard to get past them, but to look into the future.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, it's really easy for me to say, yeah, the state of, I know too many stories of people whose lives have been ruined because of what seemed to me like a dumb reason.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But now I look into the future, and not asking you to apologize for capitalism, but asking us to think about this policy proposal
mm-hmm.
in the context of our current economic system.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the marijuana industry, maybe we can each do this. Let's
okay.
each paint the picture of what we think the marijuana industry, you tell yours and then I'll say if I think mine's any different. What do you think the marijuana industry looks like 12 years from now, assuming this gets passed?
This is pretty easy to do because we have plenty of track record from around the world in various levels of marijuana decriminalization and legalization. We have Dutch coffee shops for the past 30 years. We find half the use of marijuana in Holland, both among teens and adults, than we have here. We've had complete drug decriminalization in Portugal. All drugs are legal to possess and use. They've had a reduction in their HIV deaths, and their injection addicts are growing older and fewer. And in the case of Colorado and Washington, we can see that the sky hasn't fallen yet. Colorado's created some 18,000 jobs. Tourism's up 6%. And as far as Measure 91 and what it will allow, it allows what Colorado and Washington allows. They're trying to give you this scare that, oh my God, it allows 8 ounces. No, it allows 1 ounce outside the house, 8 ounces in the home, which is less.
An ounce is kind of a lot.
Not really. An ounce is pretty comparable to maybe a pack of cigarettes.
How long does it take an average user to smoke an ounce?
Oh, I don't know. It depends. An average user might use that within a week. A
friend of mine, when I was growing up, his dad was a major marijuana dealer in Oregon, and he ended up in very dire straits. But his allowance was an ounce a week. That's what he got. He got an ounce of marijuana a week. He
mm-hmm.
could sell it, and that's how he could like live his lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what he could sell it for, but it was a bigger
probably
allowance.
Around 300 an ounce.
Yeah,
probably.
It was kind of a lot. Mm-hmm. It was a lot bigger allowance.
Right. And that happened under Prohibition, and all the money that was made was never taxed and never helped the public.
So here's why I'm not sure it's going to be like Amsterdam.
Okay.
I don't know enough. I need to rely on people like you and others to help me understand better so the intricacies of how their regulatory structure will differ from our proposed regulatory
mm-hmm.
structure in the various states and then with a federal overlay.
Okay.
Right? So some of this I'm traveling with a bit of ignorance.
Okay.
But, so I've been to Amsterdam. I smoke weed, but I didn't smoke weed in Amsterdam. I haven't for a long time. But I thought about it. If it passes, what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I went to a casino in Amsterdam, and it wasn't very good. Right, it was kind of dingy and not.
Yeah.
I just didn't have it figured out. If you go to Las Vegas casino,
mm-hmm.
they pump oxygen in it.
Yep.
Right. You don't know where the exit door is. Right.
Distracting patterns on the carpet. No clocks.
The patterns of the sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Are
yep.
dazzling.
Yep.
Okay. Like we figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
We figured out how to do casinos
mm-hmm.
in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
My impression is we're better than the Dutch. I don't mean it every single way, but in figuring out how to like market a product, including a product that has chemical impacts, some
mm-hmm.
might say addictive, some might not say addictive, but nonetheless,
sort of
impact you chemically. Like we figured that out. Like
mm-hmm.
we figured, you know, our tobacco companies kick the tar literally out of, you know, other tobacco companies.
Yeah.
Our liquor companies tend to kick the tar in marketing
mm-hmm.
over other liquor companies. The reason I don't think it's going to be like the Dutch is we're just going to be better. Like, we're going to figure out Joe Camel for weed,
mm-hmm.
right? We're going to figure out modulating THC levels so it gets people to, you know, they used to be able to get by with,
yeah.
you know, an ounce a month, but
yeah.
then it's going to take them, you know, an ounce a week. So keep painting a picture for me in the future.
All right. Let me explain what's happened in Colorado and Washington already. Both states have already accepted advertising restrictions more strict on their product than are currently allowed for alcohol and tobacco. We learned the lesson of Big Tobacco. We learned the lesson of Joe Camel. That's not going to appear with marijuana.
Because it's still in all the movies. Like,
Joe Camel was killed in 1998. No teenager alive today has ever seen Joe Camel.
No, I don't mean Joe Camel's in movies, but there's still, like, tobacco marketing is still brilliant. It's just not out on TV.
Sure, sure. But
maybe that doesn't matter. Like, maybe we don't care very much. But sure. I do want us to understand what we're getting into.
I understand people have this fear of over-commercialization and over-marketing and trying to entice kids and trying to modulate THC levels and such like that. That happens now. That happens under prohibition. Right now, the marketing of marijuana is it's this cool, underground, sneaky, subversive thing, and that's what attracts kids to it. We have seen the rate of teenage marijuana use in Colorado drop from 24.8% monthly to 20% monthly from 2009 to 2013. That's the Colorado Healthy Kids Survey. We've already seen these rates go down as marijuana
becomes that is interesting.
No big deal.
I can't vouch for your number, but that is interesting.
Colorado Healthy Kids Survey. Look it up. 2009 to 2013.
Who funded the survey?
Yeah, what's that?
Who funded the survey?
It's the state of Colorado.
So what's your prediction of marijuana use in Oregon if this measure passes? Options are reduces slightly because it's not as cool anymore, increases slightly, stays the same because nobody cares about what the law is. Option three increases slightly. Option four increases significantly.
I've got an option 3.5, which is a small spike after it's legalized by baby boomers who went, oh, wow, I smoked back in the day. Let me try it again.
Yeah.
But an overall decrease over time.
Really?
Yes. I predict an overall decrease
right.
over time.
So
right now,
that, yeah, okay.
Right now, all of the kids who want marijuana can get it.
Yeah.
Any young person that wants marijuana, either high school or college age, has a guy.
Yeah.
They've got a hookup. It's middle-aged guys like me that don't have a guy.
Yeah.
So we have seen since 2002, from 2002 to 2012, this is the National Survey on Drug Use and Health. In 2002, there were two 12 to 17-year-old marijuana smokers monthly for every one over 50. Now, those same two teen marijuana smokers exist. In fact, the numbers went down 200,000. But now there are three seniors for every two teenagers. The number of seniors, people 50 and over, who've used marijuana has gone from 0.9 million to over 3 million in just this decade. And that's largely attributable to the medical marijuana laws that are passed throughout the states that finally get some safe access for older people that want to use cannabis. We also see in the medical marijuana states, in Colorado, their average marijuana use age is 41, in California it's 32, nationwide it's 27. So it seems to me regulation pushes the average age toward the older person, and especially when older folks start to realize that cannabis can replace the Tylenol, the Viagra, the Chardonnay, the Ambien, the Xanax, the Prozac that they're popping like candy, they're definitely going to be more interest among older people for marijuana than younger people. The use by younger people will fall off because it's going to be harder for them to get. Kids, again, Colorado Healthy Kids Survey shows that the kids' ease of access, their perception of how easy it is to get marijuana, is lower in Colorado than it is on the national average and has been declining since regulations have kicked in.
Because it's been easier. It's easier for them to shoulder tap, you know, somebody on the black market than it is to go to a store with their carding.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
hold on. So helpful. And by the way, listeners, thanks for listening. You're listening to X-Ray FM. My name is Jefferson Smith. We're talking to Radical Russ Belleville around legalization of marijuana, Measure 91 on the ballot right now. Ballot's coming out like
today,
like right now. And the voter registration deadline just passed, but you can still update your registration if you go online to the Secretary of State's website. Just Google "register to vote online" and like it'll be within five links after like the first three or probably marketing campaign of some sort. So. So I don't know what my prediction is, right? And my prediction is actually impacting on my view. I'm struggling. I don't like to admit this. I don't know what I think about this. I don't know if I'm a yes or a no. That very rarely happens to me on a ballot issue. I don't know if I'm a yes or no. It's very hard.
I would ask yourself and ask your listeners to ask themselves this question. When you vote no, you are saying, you know what? The way we're doing it now is just fine.
No.
Arresting 3,000 people
buy it.
A year, ticketing 10,000 a year.
That's where I get off the bus. So because that's obviously not my view. It's not my view. In fact, there were a couple of colleagues of mine in the legislature who put forward a proposal, the best proposal that I remember seeing, which is basically ratcheted up the regulation a lot, right? Like it was more state controlled. It was a Republican and a Democrat, but it was pretty much socialized weed, right?
Yeah, kind of like state-run liquor store thing.
And yeah, a little bit. And the but even more sort of more highly regulated. And I was like, oh yeah, that seems right. And this one, I don't know, because, yeah, I do think this current state of affairs is dumb, but I don't think those are the options, because if this goes down, they're coming back with something else, right? Like, we're going to be having this conversation.
Oh, it's inevitable, yeah.
Unless the conversation is resolved.
But 26,000 people will be ticketed and cited.
My prediction is different than yours. But I don't have any real, I don't have a computer program where I can input the data and run scenarios to see if I'm right, right? Only time will tell.
Mm-hmm.
But my prediction is different than yours. My prediction is this. That you've changed my prediction ever so slightly, because I do think probably that you might be right, that for young kids, that might get normalized a little bit, right? It might be a little bit harder. The regulation might improve. The overall marijuana use, my guess is, will have an initial spike, and then over time will increase. And it'll increase in the number of people who use, and because of the impacts of marketing, right? But I could be wrong. I could be wrong. But that's my prediction, is it will increase.
Well, let's say you're right and it does increase.
Maybe that doesn't matter.
The question isn't whether it increases, it's whether harm increases.
Yeah,
if more people are smoking weed and exchanging that for using prescription drugs or alcohol, I think that's a net benefit on our road safety, in our public health costs, and so forth. If people, and I know plenty of people who kick cigarettes because they've used cannabis to get over it. If that happens and they end up using more cannabis and less tobacco, I think that's a great thing too. It's important to remember that this is not some new abstract concept. We are following in the footsteps of Washington and Colorado and have learned the best.
But what do you say? But now you've got the voters of Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
So this same thing. It's going to be the same thing with GMOs, right? I'm concerned the GMO labeling is going to go down because Monsanto is coming in, or because Big Ag is coming in with lots of money to beat.
Sure.
Right? So there'll be this brief window of time where Oregonians are convinced that they shouldn't want GMOs to be labeled. But right after the election, they're going to think that GMO should be labeled. What we're seeing in Colorado is now a bunch of Coloradans, including some people who presumably voted in favor of legalization, are now saying, oops, wish we wouldn't have, including the governor of Colorado. Maybe we don't care about that. Do we care about that?
What the governor of Colorado has said?
Why do they have buyer's remorse in Colorado?
I wouldn't say that they have buyer's remorse in Colorado at all. The most recent polls that have come out on this have still shown majority support. While it has fallen from 55% to 50%, that's just part of working out the kinks in the regulations. And one of the advantages we'll have is that, unlike Colorado, we're not passing a constitutional amendment. If there's a problem with this, if we discover something needs to be fixed,
what about the driving thing?
What about it?
So the challenge, what the DUI look like for weed? Does it matter?
You'd have to ask Josh Marquis. He convicted a kid for DUI without even believing he had marijuana in his system.
But we're not voting on Josh Marquis.
Okay.
We're voting on whether this ballot initiative is correctly.
Marijuana legalization does not invent cars and marijuana. Marijuana DUI is already illegal, and plenty of people get busted for it already.
Do we know how to test for it?
There's no accurate scientific way to test for marijuana because of the physiology of how it works in our bodies. I think the best way to test people for whether they're impaired on the road is to test whether they're impaired on the road. Do the nose to the finger. Walk the straight line.
Radical Russ, I want to say thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, Jefferson.
It was good to talk to you. You're a very articulate radical man.
I appreciate it.
Have a great day. Stay tuned next. You're going to have a chance to meet the person that Rolling Stone magazine called Enemy Number One.
You got to listen. You got to run.
Yeah, I'll listen.